Radio Prague News.
Ice hockey coach Vladimir Ružička has been fined for embezzlement. A case involving the hoisting of red boxer shorts over Prague Castle will return to court. And events are being planned to mark what would have been the 80th birthday of Václav Havel. Ice hockey coach Vladimir Ružička has received a fine of 400,000 crowns after being found guilty of embezzling 500,000 crowns intended for his then club Slavia Prague. If Ružička, who denies any wrongdoing, fails to pay the fine, he will face 16 months in prison. The verdict may be appealed. As a player, Ružička was part of the Czech team that won gold in the Olympics, while as a trainer he's led the national side and spent nearly 15 years at Slavia. A case involving the hoisting of a giant pair of red boxer shorts over Prague Castle is set to return to the Prague 1 District Court. An appeals court upheld an action taken by the State Attorney's Office against a previous ruling by the District Court dismissing the case. Three members of the art group Stohoven are accused of disorderly conduct, criminal damage and theft for illicitly removing the presidential flag above Prague Castle and replacing it with the red shorts last September in protest at the policies of President Miloš Zeman. ANO would come first in general elections with 28.5% support, suggests a new opinion poll published by the CVVM agency on Tuesday. The party's coalition partners, the Social Democrats, would place second on 23%, the survey conducted this month indicates. The Communists would be the choice of 15% of respondents ahead of the Civic Democrats with 9.5% backing and the Christian Democrats on top 09, who would tie on 6.5%, according to the CVVM poll. Miloš Zeman has granted his third presidential pardon since being appointed in 2013. The recipient of the pardon was charged with obstructing justice, but suffers from brain damage caused by a stroke and did not understand why he was facing trial. The request for clemency was made by the state attorney. Prior to his election, President Zeman said he would only grant pardons in very exceptional cases. In 2013, he transferred the power to conduct clemency proceedings to the Minister of Justice, saying he regarded it as an unnecessarily monarchical element of the Constitution. A number of events are being planned to mark what would have been the 80th birthday of Václav Havel. On the actual anniversary of the late playwright and president's birth on October 5th, a gathering is set to take place on Prague's Wenceslas Square. While 80 figures from public life and the arts world are set to appear on four stages at the city's Lucerna Palace in a tribute on October 15th. Meanwhile, the Václav Havel Library Foundation in the United States will present Burmese writer Ma Tida with its first annual Disturbing the Peace Award at the Bohemian National Hall in New York on Wednesday. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Vaňková. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech and Slovak governments have met for a joint working session in Bratislava to discuss the state of bilateral ties and their position on key European issues. The days of Czech beer are currently underway in the Czech Republic, and later on, a memorial plaque has recently been unveiled in St. Andrews in Scotland to commemorate a Czech scholar and Hussite emissary who was burnt at the stake in the city in 1433. Find out more in today's edition of In Focus. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech and Slovak governments met for a joint working session in Bratislava on Monday to discuss the state of bilateral ties, cooperating in security and defence, and their position on key European issues. 23 years after the Velvet divorce, the two neighbours say their relationship is better than ever. Daniela Lazarova has the details.
23 years ago, they had insurmountable differences on who should be in government and where they were headed. But today, Czechs and Slovaks say they have no closer ally on the international scene. Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico.
It's very pleasing that, according to repeated surveys, the Czechs feel that Slovaks are the nation closest to their hearts and vice versa. This is a great asset in today's uneasy and turbulent world and in the presently unstable and uncertain European Union.
While in 1993 Czechs and Slovaks wanted to pursue separate foreign policies, today they frequently meet to consult their positions on key European and global issues in view of increasing their clout in the European Union. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said they were fighting side by side to defend their priorities.
We have the same priorities in seeking a solution to the migration crisis, i.e. increasing security on Schengen's outer border and a repatriation policy that will enable the EU to stop illegal migration on its border. We are engaged in intensive cooperation to that effect and will continue to work together in the future.
Prague and Bratislava are also speaking in one voice as regards the question of mandatory migrant quotas proposed by the European Commission, which both have strongly rejected, and both have stressed the need for EU unity in the Brexit talks, fearing a deal that might leave their country's nationals in a worse position on the British labour market. Speaking in Bratislava, Prime Minister Sobotka stressed the importance of regional cooperation and consensus in the present-day European Union.
I think that the Visegrad Group Alliance is an important instrument that allows us to influence decision-making in the European Union. Speaking with one voice, we have more clout in the European Council than if we acted alone. And I'm very glad that the close relations between Prague and Bratislava strengthen Visegrad unity and allow us to use that unity in communicating our national interests in the EU.
In the area of bilateral ties, the two countries are working to improve rail and road connections, planning to jointly defend their airspace and cooperate in seeking new markets. And last but not least, they are making plans for joint celebrations of the 100th anniversary of the founding of Czechoslovakia in 1918, the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968, and their amicable velvet divorce in 1993.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. Now, it started off 4 years ago as the Day of Czech Beer, but for the second time now, this celebration of beer and pub culture has been expanded into a week-long festival. It runs from the 23rd of September until the 1st of October, with over 6,000 pubs, restaurants and breweries around the country taking part. Dominik Jun has more.
Days of Czech Beer is organised by the Czech Association of Brewers and Malt Houses, an industry group working to advance the interests of Czech beer both at home and abroad. The event celebrates not only beer, but pub culture as a whole. And so participating pubs around the country are offering up not only special beers, but also unique menus featuring dishes such as roast boar served with rosehip sauce. Meanwhile, breweries are opening up their doors to visitors who will be able to see just how the beloved amber drink is made, including some, like the Velko Popovický Pivovar just west of Prague, offering after-dark tours. Martina Ferencová is the executive director of the Czech Association of Brewers and Malt Houses.
This year, dozens of breweries and microbreweries are taking part alongside around 6,000 pubs and restaurants. We christened the festival on the 20th of September with a gala event at Prague's National House in Vinohrady. Visitors to pubs will be able to sample rare and special beers. Visitors will also be able to meet with brewers and tour breweries. So we believe we have a very rich program for this year.
One of the key reasons for the event is to try to reverse a long-term decline in visitor numbers to Czech pubs and restaurants. Increasingly, Czechs are preferring to drink bottled beer at home rather than visiting a pub. And overall, Czech per capita consumption of beer has also dropped by 1 litre, down to 143 litres, although that is still the highest in the world. As part of Days of Czech Beer, brewer Gambrinos is offering up a rare once-a-year beer made from its first hop harvest. while Staropramen is offering up a special non-pasteurized extra hop 12-degree strength beer. Numerous microbreweries are also utilizing this special opportunity to have customers sample their product. Martina Ferencová explained the wider work undertaken by her association, whose history harks back to the 19th century and was revived in its current form in 1991.
The Czech Association of Brewers and Malt Houses is an association of breweries and malt houses and associated organizations. We have 50 members and our role is to defend their interests, which is why we organize these kinds of events designed to help support the image of Czech beer. We also organize projects to support responsible drinking and so on.
Last year, Czech breweries made 20.1 million hectolitres of beer, a figure 2.2% higher than in 2014. A small decline in Czech beer consumption has been more than offset by increased exports. For more information on the festival, go to their website at dnicheskehopiva.cz.
Dominik Jun with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. A plaque commemorating Pavel Kravař, a Czech scholar and Hussite emissary from Bohemia, was recently unveiled in St. Andrews in Scotland, close to the spot in Market Street, where he was burnt at the stake for heresy in 1433. The university master was the first of a succession of religious reformers who were martyred in the town during the Protestant Reformation. The commemoration was initiated by Paul Vishny, a British historian of Slovak origin who worked at the University of St. Andrews and who has long studied the trial of the Czech scholar. I spoke to Mr. Vishny over the phone from St. Andrews to ask him what we know about Pavel Kravař, or Paul Kraw, as he's called in English.
Well, we don't know a great deal about him, and particularly his journey to Scotland. How he got here is totally unknown. He would have possibly travelled overland and obviously across Europe and then through England. Or possibly he came by boat from Holland, because there is a small harbour in St. Andrews, and in the Middle Ages it was quite extensively used. But this is only speculation. We have absolutely no information about his travel. The only information we do have is when he did arrive in St. Andrews, and then Scottish chronicler called Walter Bower recorded his trial and his execution at St. Andrews. The only other pieces of hard information that we have concern his education. It's presumed that he was born in the village of Kravaše near Opava in what is now the Czech Republic, and it's assumed again that he was probably born about 1390 or 1391. He was then educated in France. He studied medicine at Montpellier and later graduated with a Master of Arts degree from Paris in 1415. After that, we know he was in Prague, at the University of Prague, where he probably was a teacher. And the next recorded information we have is when he entered the service of the Polish king as a physician, as a medic. There's an evidence of a letter that he wrote at that time. The next hard information we have is when he arrived in St. Andrews in 1433, and where he, as you know, was sentenced and executed.
What do we know about his execution, and is the site where he died marked in any way?
Well, indirectly the site is marked, because the centre of the marketplace in St. Andrews, there is a stone cross set into the cobbles of the road surface, and it marks the former location of the Mercat Cross, which was situated in the centre of the town, indicating the centre of the town. And not only were markets held in that area, but it was also the place of public executions. And one of the sources about his death in St. Andrews indicates that the burning took place at that point, and that is, I think, quite logically the place where it would have occurred. St. Andrews subsequently, during the course of the Protestant Reformation, became a centre of a lot of religious activity, and at that time there were four other individuals who were burnt for alleged heresy in the town at different places. They do have a memorial. There is an obelisk on the seafront which carries their names, but Pavel Kravař is not mentioned there at all. And it's only very recently, a couple of days ago, that this plaque was unveiled, and at last he has an official recognition in St Andrews.
Who initiated the unveiling of the memorial?
Well, I suppose I hold myself responsible for that. It goes back a long way. My father, who came from Czechoslovakia, visited us here in St Andrews on one occasion and asked me whether I knew that a Czech Hussite had been burnt at the stake in St Andrews, and at that point I said no, I didn't. And that really started my interest in the whole development. And from there, it progressed. I gradually developed interest in the topic. And thanks to the Czech Emigres Cultural Association in London, they encouraged me to pursue this, and eventually a plaque has been made and installed. And on the 14th of this month, the ambassador of the Czech Republic in the United Kingdom came and ceremonially unveiled the plaque in the presence of the principal of St Andrews University. And I think that is significant because the persecution of Pavel Kravař here in St Andrews was in fact carried out by the university. They saw him as a dangerous influence. At that time, Scotland was a firmly Catholic country, and the university here was a very definitely a Catholic institution, and they saw Pavel Kravař's ideas as potentially dangerous, which is why he was received so hostilely and put to death.
Is he actually regarded as someone who helped to usher in the Reformation?
I think indirectly. It was 100 years before the Reformation, but there was some evidence that at that time in St Andrews and elsewhere in Scotland, there were stirrings of opposition to Orthodox Catholicism. In fact, that is possibly the explanation for his journey to St Andrews, because at the university here, in about 1420 or thereabouts, the members of the university were made to swear an oath of loyalty to the church. And the fact that they were made to do that could suggest that there was a stirring of opposition. And it could well be that the Hussite movement in Prague became aware of these views in Scotland, and that is possible reason why Pavel Kravař came here. The timing also is perhaps significant because the Battle of Domažlice occurred in, I think it was 1431, when the Hussite movement defeated an expeditionary force. And after that, the Council of Basel negotiations for reconciliation between the church and the Hussite movement were to begin. So it is possible, and this is only speculation because there was absolutely no concrete evidence, but it is possible that Kravař was sent to Scotland to find friends and allies who would help in the Hussite cause at the negotiations. Obviously, if that was the case, then he wasn't successful.
And finally, you said that you hadn't previously known about the existence of Pavel Kravař. How well is he known among historians in Scotland?
I think among historians, yes, he is well known. But I think the absence of a memorial up to now in St Andrews means that amongst the general public, he's not well known. But hopefully the installation of the plaque here will now change that situation and more people will become aware of his existence and indeed of the significance of his existence, because obviously the Hussite movement in Prague felt that it was important to send someone to Scotland, so establishing an important historical link between Central Europe and Scotland. And I think that is something that's significant and to be celebrated.
Paul Vishny, a British historian of Slovak origin, talking about Czech scholar and Hussite emissary Pavel Kravař. And that brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us at email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.